Okay, so we can answer food. So weird for me.
Anyway, what are we supposed to talk about?
I was going to kind of ask you some questions about group that first learning to guru, searching, carrying on research, or getting that revelation.
You already know of everything.
Not really.
Yeah, you have. You've studied Gorgomini Maharaj's books, and Bhakti Sananta has his things to say. As far as I know, Madhavananda also printed that thing with Bhakti Sananta's statement concerning the importance of manifesting the individual sincerity and how Chaita Guru's within the heart and Chaita Guru's guides.
Uh-huh.
You know, Yayatam Mampapaditi Tangsatari Bhajamiham, as a surrender according to the sincerity. Sincerity, according to Prabhupada, is defined as the desire to please Krishna. So if there's a serious desire to please Krishna, then Chaita Guru knows what's the actual intent within the heart, the hopes, the aspirations of every living entity.
So according to the sending Guru?
Yeah, then...
Guru Maharaj is saying according to your desire, you will get... If you haven't got...
That means sincerity.
Yeah, because one of the questions is like...
If you want Sadguru, then you're going to get Sadguru. Of course, you're going to get Sadguru when Krishna is ready to give you Sadguru. Otherwise, you get... Yeah, because the thing is, we have to remember that there's two things. One thing is what we think we want now. And the other thing is what we deserve according to what happened in previous lives.
Uh-huh. That's one of the things I want to talk to you about.
You know, because it may be, for example, if you take into consideration the instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave to one devotee who was splintering away from ISKCON, I think he was in Hawaii at that time, not to mention any names unnecessarily, but he told to that devotee that if he didn't come back to Srila Prabhupada, in other words, if he tagged his guru, because Prabhupada was his guru, that if he tagged his guru, then he wouldn't get guru again for 700 lifetimes. So you can imagine if something like that happened to someone in some previous lifetime, then he may be struggling to find guru. Even he comes in contact with devotional association because he had, after all, in previous lifetimes, he had previous devotional association or whatever. But he may not be able to solve his guru problems for 700 lifetimes. Things like that can happen. In other words, due to offenses done to the guru in previous lifetimes. In other words, Krishna knows very well that a particular soul misbehaved toward one of his representatives, because after all, they're Krishna's representatives. So it's not like Krishna doesn't know everything. Chaita Guru knows everything. Paramatma knows everything.
Can I ask a couple of questions in terms of, because the basic process, from what I've understood, is to chant and to associate with those people that are aspiring for those things or have that thing. But I am serious. You need to hear from those.
To try to seek out pure devotional association.
Yeah, and to try and serve those devotees.
Because if you don't seek out pure devotional association, then that's also indicative of your desire to maintain material attachments or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing, when it says someone is searching for that guru, that's a desire, or desire to meet that type of person, the level of their security may not allow them to have that. They just carry on chanting and doing their service, and because surely one part of it is, you're a fallen person, you're trying to find someone who can help you to become more and more serious. And, but you may not afford that type of person yet.
Yeah.
So just by carrying on...
Or you may not be able to see that person.
Krishna's
not allowing you to see.
Yeah.
Just like so many people saw Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra, but they didn't recognize who he actually was.
Yeah.
They actually saw. Atheists will see the deity in the temple and see a stone. They won't recognize that he's actually Satchidananda Vigraha, Krishna himself. So according to the eligibility to see, and according to Krishna's desire, because Krishna says, yoga maya samavita, mudoyam na vijananti. He doesn't reveal himself. They don't see.
And the prayer, like, so can you say to Krishna, Krishna, my desire is to meet a Prem Bhakta, who's a Guru Bhakta and a Prem Bhakta, for example, so that's my desire, because a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Is that a conditional prayer?
No, but a more realistic prayer.
Yeah.
Because actually, you can say your desire.
Yeah.
But is it really your desire?
Yeah, that's
to what extent is it your desire? In other words, just like you might have heard me tell the story of how I threw my beads across the room and blurted out to the inner voice within me, which was again and again interrupting. It was Krishna interrupting my japa, saying, first deserve, then desire, first deserve, then desire. Then I threw my beads all the way into that corner from all the way over here. The curtains were closed. My deities were taking rest there. It was around 1 o'clock in the morning when I was chanting my japa. And said, damn it, when will I be able to deserve the desire? And then immediately, as soon as I said that, within a split second, an Akashvani in my room. Akashvani means a sky voice, a voice that manifested, permeating the whole ethereal atmosphere, saying, when your desire is big enough. It was the first time and last time I've ever heard an actual Akashvani.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't coming from any particular place, it was just coming from ether. But that answer to my question answered a lot of questions for me. When your desire is big enough. So what that means, the immediate implication of that statement manifest in my heart as soon as he said it, was that desire is big enough means that it's so big that there's no room for any other desires in your heart. When you're actually desiring Sadguru and there's no room for any other desire in your heart, then from your side, you're deserving. Because you're deserving when your desire is big enough. You're deserving from your side. It can only be when your desire is so big that there's no other desire in your heart. No room for any other desires. So then, the point is that it may not be so realistic for you to pray in such a way that I desire this. So therefore, please fulfill my desire, because your desire may not be big enough. In other words, you may not deserve.
No doubt.
So the better thing to pray for, more honestly admitting that I know that I should be desiring, but I know my desire is not big
enough.
I know that I don't deserve. I don't deserve anything. After all, my desire was to leave the company of Krishna, to come to suffer in this material world, to play number one, the big boss, big fish. So that was my desire. And as long as my false egoism is not completely purified, that desire is still lingering to some extent or another. So therefore, really, my desire is not big enough. So therefore, really, I don't deserve. I don't deserve Guru. If it's depending on the amount of my sincerity, meaning I have the desire to please Krishna by somehow or other serving his representative, Guru, then I'll never make it. So therefore, the prayer should not be that I desire this, therefore could you please fulfill. The prayer should be that I know that I don't desire it. I know that I don't deserve. I don't have enough desire. I don't have enough sukriti. I don't have enough going. But my prayer is to beg and beg and beg for special causes, mercy of Krishna. That even though I don't desire, but I have no other hope if I don't get,
someone who... I'm not qualified at all. I feel that, and I feel like I'm chanting and crying, but I know that I'm far away from, but I know that that's the right thing, and that if I do it, if I try to do anything else, and try and surrender to someone without having faith that type of person, I'll be cheating myself and that person.
Yeah.
That'd be a funny thing to do. So I want to make it as...
But, you know, before we can wrap this point up, but then there's another point of discussion that can be also entertained. The fact that we actually don't deserve, or the recognition of our lack of deserving, doesn't stop when Krishna somehow or other miraculously
gives
his causeless mercy to reveal to you your Sadguru. Even after Krishna gives his causeless mercy, if he so desires, to answer that prayer, not that I desire it, but whether I desire or don't desire, I need your mercy.
Yeah.
And hopefully, by the influence of such a stalwart devotee, then he can help me to increase my desire like that, or become more qualified, or more deserving. We don't deserve. Who deserves? Yeah. Hardly anyone can say that they deserve to have Sadhguru. But that mentality, that understanding, that realization, as it were, that I don't deserve and that I require mercy, that should be a perpetual thing, a perpetual consciousness of the individual, that actually I don't deserve. I can never deserve, really, sufficiently. If I could deserve, then I could pay back my spiritual master. I could repay the debt that I owe to the spiritual master for his mercifully, causelessly mercifully, picking up such a wretched individual as myself. So actually I don't deserve. I'm always falling short of actually deserving. And therefore I always require to again and again petition Guru and Krishna for special causeless mercy. Meanwhile, I try my best, and Krishna does the rest. Try my best, but we never try our best.
Yeah.
It's most but, you know, but at least, you know, our level best.
Yeah, because that's the point. I can see there's more I can do, but I can't do that. So it's like...
Because we're not surrendered enough.
Yeah. It's like, can't even try.
We're not inspired enough. We're not...
But pure enough.
Too many anarthas and whatnot. So ultimately, that should be our prayer, both before and after we get the divine dispensation of Sadhguru.
That's a play in that. Yeah. That meant, it can be more honest than all.
It's ultimately Krishna's Sadhguru.
Yeah.
Guru is Krishna, and others may be representative agents of his energy. Krishna Shakti, meaning Ahitabhavartha. So, but aside from that, you know, in terms of increasing our Sukriti, so that...
That's our desire, basically.
Yeah. Sukriti means our good fortune.
Yeah.
We have to become fortunate. Bhagyavanji. So, to the degree that you're fortunate, to that degree, but accumulating agyata and gyata Sukriti over lifetimes and lifetimes, the good fortune can be increased. It's just like you may be a pauper now, but if somehow or other you get
work in the right direction.
You know, mercifully benedicted by someone who comes along and puts a little something in your bank account here and there, then gradually, with interest and whatnot, your bank account increases. So the idea of spiritual Sukriti going into your transcendental bank account means gradually increasing your good fortune so that you become more and more Bhagyavan. Then there's ways to knowingly also, seeing as to how we have some cognizance of the fact that there's necessity. So then you can knowingly go about doing things which will help to increase the stockpile of good fortune in your transcendental bank account, such as circumambulating Govardhan Hill, daily bathing in Yamuna, daily worshipping Tulsi Maharani, trying to do our Shniksnik Ramran as best we can, taking darshan of the deities, attending the Sankirtan performances. After all, that's the Yuga Dharma. Mahaprabhu came forward in this age to propagate the Yuga Dharma, and we're saying, I'm too busy, I don't have time to be bothered with that. There's other more important things on my platter. That's the way it is with an awful lot of devotees. They just don't do Harinam Sankirtan, which is the actual Yuga Dharma. And they do so very little of it. They have so many other things to do, more important supposedly, but they're not more important. There's actually nothing more important than performing the Yuga Dharma. Anything else that we're doing should culminate in our inspiration to perform the Yuga Dharma. And if it doesn't do that, then it means that we should question whether or not we're doing the right thing, or whether our mindset is in the right place, whether we've actually understood what is Mahaprabhu's intentions for the fallen conditioned souls. So if Mahaprabhu sees that someone is again and again and again, daily, regularly, engaging himself in Nam Sankirtan with as much energy and as much of his time involvement as possible, then he's going to see that this man is at least sincere, at least a little serious, about taking the gift that I've come to offer, namely Kali Yuga Dharma, Arinam Sankirtan. So if he sees that at least you're interested in the affair, then he may be inspired more quickly to reciprocate that this man's serious about doing the Yuga Dharma. And doing the Yuga Dharma doesn't mean that you have to have Sadguru just to do the Yuga Dharma. We should hear the holy name or chant the holy name in the association of pure devotees, or at least people who are serious about trying to become pure devotees. Whether they're on the clearing stage or on, at least if they're on the clearing stage, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they are not bad company. It's not bad to associate with persons who are chanting Namavas, shadow Namavas. But it's not good to associate with persons who are chanting the reflected name, Bhaktivinoda Namavas. They're materialistic devotees. But those who are chanting Chaya Namavas, it's not bad to associate with them, because at least by their association and by performing Sankirtan Jagya in their company, gradually material contamination is reducing. The anarthas are becoming, at least the grosser anarthas, which are impeding or clouding our ability to see things in proper perspective, are becoming dissipated. So then the next point of discussion would be sadhu sangha, seeking out sadhu sangha. Because factually, real sadhu is one who's chanting the pure name. But we may not be able to recognize who's chanting the pure name and who's chanting Namavas. But at least we can see who is relatively more pure in his habits or in his consciousness, in his expressions of Krishna consciousness, to the extent that we've been allowed to see that and take association from persons who are at least consciously endeavoring for perfection and who are encouraging others to endeavor for perfection. Then at least that's positive association. It's not negative association. So keeping in the company of people who are positively inclined toward the pursuit of pure devotional ideals. Meanwhile, praying and praying for special causeless mercy. But we should also consider that we may not be aware of what transpired in previous lifetimes in relationship to any representative of Krishna. It may have happened, you know, that we committed some offense and therefore were suffering a reaction to that offense. Then you have to pray to Krishna to please forgive me if I've committed any offenses in previous lifetimes out of ignorance or out of foolishness. And actually, with a repentant heart, you have to actually culture that repentant heart, being willing to admit that there may have been some reason why I'm having the problems that I'm having now in my search for guru.
Because I know, like, for me, I'm quite sensitive to avoid just generally for the first
time. Are you speaking for me too?
I didn't.
So I've always been a bit sensitive in the area, like, because the ice distorts from there, and if they're still very, like, comfortable with the dealing, I'm excited to come forward to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And just the other day, Radha was just looking at me, like, I still have a good chart. And he said, you know, something stopping you getting guru.
That can be there because of something divine trena. Karmana divine trena. Something from previous. So then you should think in terms of how to circumvent that influence in your life.
But practically, how do you do it? I mean, and asking Krishna, please help me.
Krishna doesn't have to pay attention to your chart.
Yeah, not so much to understand. That's my understanding of.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yes, that's my.
So then you have to beg Krishna forgiveness.
Yeah, that's
I mean, really beg.
Yeah.
The question is, how wet is your pillow getting at night when you lay down to take rest because you don't have a guru?
Yeah, not that way.
I'm just toying with the idea of getting guru, you know, and kind of on the mental platform, and not actually seriously break it down and crying. mm-hmm. and crying and crying and mm-hmm. crying until you actually get. Mm-hmm. It's like maybe we'll cry a few tears and then back to normal.
Yeah.
You know, life goes on.
And it's like it's slowly, the desire slowly intensifying, but not like that, you know. I'm not crying like that.
Yeah. Who's telling Krishna that, look, if I don't get Guru within 1 year's time, I'm going to jump in the Yamuna. See you later. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, you know, are you going to jump in the Yamuna? Are you going to jump off and go over Govardhan Hill because he didn't get Guru?
Not quite that serious.
You're not that serious.
I'm not.
And another point is, how serious are you about taking advantage of whatever manifestation of Guru is there for you, regardless of whether you get initiation or not? After all, there's two different kinds of Guru. There's more than two different kinds of Gurus, but primarily Diksha Guru is there, Shiksha Guru is there. So then if you find someone who's transcendentally situated, who you can ascertain has attained a considerable degree of perfection in the chanting of his mantram, etc., then by all means take Diksha from that person. But the Diksha Guru doesn't have to be the only Sadguru in your life. It's not that you only have one Sadguru. You can have many Sadgurus. So many Shiksha Gurus can also be Sadguru.
Mm-hmm. At least, according to
Jagannanda Pandit in Prema Vivarta, he says that Sadguru, that the Madhyamadikari can also act as Sadguru. He makes this point, that he is Sadguru as long as he's in the sadhu position.
What does that mean practically?
Sadhu position means that he's chanting the pure name. The Madhyamadikari also chants the pure name. It's not that only Uttamadikaris chant pure names. Some Madhyamadikaris in the lower stages of Madhyamadikari, they're not chanting the pure name, but they're on the Nishta platform. But they haven't come to the Ruchi platform. Because Krishna hasn't given himself to him. He hasn't made his divine appearance in his heart. Mother Sachi, in the form of your tongue, hasn't given birth to the divine name. According to Chaitanya Bhagavad, Mahaprabhu tells Mother Sachi that she's the tongue of all living entities. The tongue gives birth to the holy name. So anyway, aside from the point that whoever is actually sadhu, who's a pure devotee, sadhu actually means who's a pure devotee, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in Jagadharma that those who are chanting the pure name are actually pure devotees, whereas those who are chanting Namabhas are Vaishnavabhas, they're not actually pure devotees. So there's sadhu abhas also.
And don't people Ruchi and above?
Ruchi and above is considered a pure devotee. So because they're associating, in other words, Krishna is in their heart, and Krishna is dancing on their tongue in the form of the name. So they're actually sadhu. So that kind of sadhu sangha, associating with whether they're Madhyamadikari, progressively ascending to the terrace of Phala, or whether they're Bhavukas, it's mentioned that the three classes, the Premika Bhaktas, the Bhavukas, and the Jataruchi Vaishnavas.
What does that mean?
Jataruchi means that in whom Ruchi has a fruit.
Mm-hmm. Where does that mention?
It's in Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Shikshamrita says that these three classes of Vaishnavas can give mercy on three different levels. Yeah. In other words, those who are Jataruchi Vaishnavas, they have the pure name, they're engaged in pure devotional service. So they can create pure devotional Shraddha in the hearts of materialistic people, the general populace. That way they can do Jiva Doya and gradually help them to elevate to the Ruchi platform. Whereas those who are on the Bhava platform, they can immediately generate Ruchi. They can create taste for pure devotional service in the ordinary man, and gradually bring them up to the Bhava platform. But he says that the Premika Bhakta has unlimited power at his disposal, and he can immediately bring someone, an ordinary man, up to his position of Prema. But in all three cases, it is possible for someone to be benefited by associating with such persons. Of course, the obvious implication is that if you can gain the association of a Premukha Bhakta, then that's going to be better. But if you can gain association with a Bhavruka, don't think that that's not good for you. Someone who's already attained the Bala position. Because you would do well to come to the Bala platform yourself.
I do well to get past Nista.
You would even do well to have association of those who have Ruchi. It's not such a small thing. Those who have Asakti, according to Harinam Chintamani, it's described how those who have Asakti, they're like incessantly pouring tears out of their eyes, you know, and exhibiting a myriad of Asta Sattvic Vikar, even before they come to the Bhava platform. It's not a boss, it's real. So in any case, from our side, we can endeavor to seek out. But no matter how much you seek out, if Krishna doesn't want to make the connection with those people, then you can search and search and search. And even if you don't seek out, if Krishna wants to make, it'll manifest in your life.
How come you just sit down in one place and do a bhajan, don't run too much?
Yeah, and Krishna will send you.
That's what he says.
Yeah. But the further point of discussion that I feel is worth mentioning, and that is that in the Naman Mahimamrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says that I worshipped many gurus and I've read many scriptures, but his opinion is that the best guru and the best scripture is Sri Vrindavan Dham. That Vrindavan itself is guru. And furthermore, it is mentioned, even Srila Prabhupada discusses this in a conversation with some of his disciples, how those who live in Vrindavan, for them, Krishna is directly their guru.
Isn't that any adhikar in that discussion of the practitioner?
Krishna is directly their guru. The adhikar will be seen in terms of the extent that the practitioner follows their guru. Just like Prabhupada mentioned in another conversation, when a devotee asked Prabhupada that is it true that for the Brajvasis that Krishna is their guru, Prabhupada answered yes, but the difficulty is why they're not following their best guru. Krishna is the best guru, but they're not following. So then when we think in terms of following best guru, then we have to consider what is the desire, what are the instructions, what is his intention for the fallen conditioned souls in this age of Kali? So then ask yourself simply, how much Harinam Sankirtan are you doing in your life? How much of your life is actually centered around the performance of the Yuga Dharma? Everything else in the Sankirtan movement is Sankirtan, really, only to the extent that it promotes the ultimate focus on the Yuga Dharma in one's life. Otherwise, whatever else we're doing, if it doesn't increase Sankirtan Ruchi, or our absorption in Sankirtan Rasa, then it's considered as an anartha. Even though it is seen to be one of the angas of pure devotional service, the anga of pure devotional service itself can be considered an anartha. If that anga of pure devotional service doesn't promote your absorption in the Yuga Dharma Harinam Sankirtan. And many devotees don't understand this point.
You take from the other four angas, you'll get more desire to chant.
The idea is that hearing a Bhagavatam, for example, that should inspire you to glorify Krishna's name. Worshipping the deity in the temple should inspire you to glorify the deity's name. Our worship of the deity, we feed the deity nicely, take care of him nicely. Why? So that he will be inspired to remain with us. Otherwise, he might go somewhere else to get something good to eat. But it's not just that he's going to go somewhere else to get something good to eat. Even if he doesn't get something good to eat, but if he sees that his devotees are engaging in non-sankirtan, he'll be inspired to stay with us, to place his favorable glances upon our performances of non-sankirtan. But if we're lavishing him, but we're not doing the Yuga Dharma, if we're absorbed, you know, day and night in worshipping the deity, but we're not engaging in the Yuga Dharma and non-sankirtan, then it may be a long, long time before we get prema. Because in this age of Kali, it's Harinam who gives prema. Rarely the deity will give prema, or even Baba. It may happen. But it usually happens in the lives of those who are, the deity gives prema or Baba to those who are performing Nam Sankirtan. And he's satisfied by their performance of Yajna. No one can claim to be pleasing Krishna in this age of Kali without pleasing Lord Chaitanya. And according to Shastra, the way to please Lord Chaitanya is to perform Nam Sankirtan. Yajyai Sankirtana Prayarya Janti Yusunyasa. Those who are good brain assumptions recognize that this is the process by which we satisfy the Kali Yuga Yajya Purush. But many devotees, they overlook that point. So then, how are they satisfying your best guru? Lord Chaitanya can be directly your guru. By living in Mayapur, Lord Chaitanya will be directly your guru. And of course, naturally, just like Gadadhar Pandit also wanted to accept Guru. So even though he's a resident of Mayapur, even though he's Radharani himself, but still he accepted Pandarik Vidyanidhi as his Guru. And Achyutananda, the son of Advaita, accepted Gadadhar Pandit as his Guru. Like that. So they still accept Guru. But at least we have that Guru who's real. Krishna's real. He's actually there. And he's actually instructing us. He instructs us through the Shastras, particularly. If we at least have Nishta for that fact that Krishna is our Guru, or that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is our Guru, then when we hear the Shastras, on the basis of that Nishta, we have eligibility to actually glean the essence of the Shastras and apply the principles in our life and make progress in Krishna consciousness.
Just on that point, just thing if you just hit it, you know. I just reading that, you know, the last article that Madhavananda was written about the Bhagavad Gita, which he's saying importance. One thing is that he was saying that reading Bhagavad Gita, but to hear it from someone who's realized it's more beneficial than reading it. We don't always have that facility in front of us.
According to Jiva Goswami, you have to take advantage of the vani of the predecessor charities. It may be better. Certainly, if there's a Mahabhagwat who has realized in his own life the beauty of the Bhagavatam, the import of the Bhagavatam, no one can deny the fact that it's best to have both the person Bhagavat Association and the book Bhagavat Association. But we shouldn't overlook the fact that the book Bhagavat also is a manifestation of the person Bhagavat. Especially Srila Prabhupada's purports are there. Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, the person Srila Prabhupada, the person Bhagavat, then read my books. He didn't say, if you want to know me, then come clamor around my lotus feet so that you might be able to hear a word or two from me. How many disciples? It's not that you can't get Guru Nishtha from associating with his vani. Guru Nishtha can come. Mercy comes in four ways. Hari, Guru, Vaishnava, Bhagavad Gita. If you have Nishtha for the association of Vaishnavas, means Shuddha Bhaktas. You have Nishtha for association with Guru. You have Nishtha for associating with Hari. You have Nishtha for associating with Bhagavad Gita. Krishna and Bhagavad Gita itself is acting as Guru. You know, Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. Go there.
That's why I said Bhagavad Gita, actually, because that's Krishna's words himself.
Obviously, yeah, Krishna's words.
And I've never thought that. That's just, when you're singing the prayer, I was thinking
Bhagavad
Gita,
but
then it's
his vani.
Yeah. That's his
vani. Which is non-different from himself. You know, the acharya is non-different from himself. Why? Because the vani of the acharya is representative of Krishna's vani. Yeah. Vaishnava is also the same. Hari, Guru, Vaishnava, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita means beginning with Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavat, and all the Acharya Rasa Granthas, and everything.
They
get mercy from all these agents of Krishna's mercy.
And connected just to what's it to Bhagavat, Shastra, hearing Shastra. You know, I don't know if it's the right thing or wrong thing, as time's gone on, I've always, like, more or less religiously gone to Bhagavatam class the last 12 years, over speaking, like I was telling Paddy, like, I started to not always feel so inspired to go. But difficult with speaking sometimes, and sometimes I think you can glean something from anyone that's speaking. What's the practical balance? And then the other side, you think, so Prabhupada was pleased that we attend Bhagavatam, the morning program, basically.
You can do that.
What's the proper balance of that?
The proper balance is that try to glean as much as you can from whichever bozo is circumstantially posing as the Bhagavat Acharya or the representative of the Bhagavat Acharya. It may unfortunately be that many speakers are not going to actually have much potency because they're not that pure. They're not that focused on the actual essence of what the Bhagavat is presenting. So they get diverted to various other sub-religious discussions which are not actually fully focused on the Bhagavad Siddhanta. So then, okay, officially, to please Prabhupada, we attend the class. But then, the rest of our day, what are we going to do? The class, after all, doesn't last for more than an hour, usually. But then, the rest of the day, you can absorb yourself in hearing from persons that you know, or at least on some relatively higher level of realization. Even impromptu discussions like the one we're having now also can be useful.
Yeah.
Maybe even you get more out of a discussion like this than you'll get out of many Bhagavatam classes.
And
there's nothing saying that you can't have Bhagavat Sangha or do Bhagavat Seva. Nityam Bhagavat Seva doesn't just mean regularly, it can also mean always. So to always be absorbed in serving the Bhagavatas. But serving the Bhagavatas means serving the principles of the Bhagavata. And the main essential purpose of the Bhagavat is to propagate Harinam Sankirtan. So if you perform Harinam Sankirtan, you're also doing Bhagavat Seva. You're doing the essential Bhagavat Seva, the highest Bhagavat Seva. But are you going to do Harinam Sankirtan or not? How much of it do you do? You probably don't do that much, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's that much. I could increase that.
You could probably do a lot more.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm also not doing very much, but that's my circumstances of situation, and you also have your circumstances and situations. But I'm trying to
plan to make it
prod you to do as much as you possibly can, because even I don't do as much as I wish I could be anymore, but if I can convince you to do and you make progress by doing it, then I at least get a little credit for having given you some indication as to how you could actually increase your chances of getting Sadguru. You don't think that Harinam Prabhu is qualified to be your Sadguru?
Actually, I mean, according to Shastra, you can get everything without even.
Yeah.
But that's rare, that also says Shastra.
But Sadguru can guide you. A holy name can also bestow upon you everything. Can guide you as.
I know, so that's for me, my faith goes to the holy name at the end of the day, personally.
Yeah, then you have to prove it by doing as much Sankirtan as possible. And that means sharing your inspiration with others. Mm-hmm. After all, what is Braj Bhakti? Braj Bhakti, the whole purpose of the Gaudiya Sampradaya is to propagate Braj Bhakti. Rag Marg Bhakti Loki Korite Prachadan. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami mentions how Lord Chaitanya came for two purposes, and that is Prema Rasa Niryasa Korite Swadhana, Rag Marg Bhakti Loki Korite Prachana. Those two purposes only. He had no other purposes. One was to relish the mellows of Prema Bhakti, and the other was to preach, propagate Rag Marg Bhakti in the world. Spontaneous devotional service, following the footsteps of the Prajapatis. But following the footsteps of the Prajapatis means to imbibe or to become imbued with their actual devotional mentality. So what is their devotional mentality? Their devotional mentality is that they're willing to sacrifice everything, including their own happiness, or the consideration of their happiness and distress, for the pleasure of Krishna. And since it is mentioned that the highest pleasure of Krishna is evinced in the gopis experiencing 10 million times the happiness of their own meeting with Krishna by making arrangements for others to meet with Krishna. In other words, doing para upakara, engaging for the benefit of others. So Sankirtan is para upakara. Non-bhajan in the form of japa, that is also for the benefit of others. After all, bhajan is for Krishna's pleasure. It's not for our pleasure. It's for Krishna's benefit. It's to please him, to make him happy, to make Radha and Krishna happy. We want to make Radha happy by chanting the name of Krishna, and we want to make Krishna happy by chanting the name of Radha. Therefore, our chanting is for their pleasure, not just, you know, a matter of getting it over or a sense of dutifulness or whatever, but to have the desire to please Krishna. That is sincere. So sincere chanting is to chant with the intention of giving pleasure to Radha and Krishna, or giving pleasure to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that way, our performance of chanting, whether it's in terms of japa yajna or what it is in terms of sankirtan yajna, nam sankirtan yajna, but the principle of doing good for others or living for the benefit of others, just like Prabhupada has mentioned that the brahmachari, this is the training, the student life, means he's supposed to be trained. If he learns the lesson well, then he doesn't have to enter the grihastha ashram, you know, to learn it in a different way. But if he learns his lesson well, the brahmachari lives in the house of the spiritual master for the benefit of the spiritual master, not for his own benefit. So from the very onset of one's spiritual training, one's supposed to be learning how to live for the benefit of others. The whole idea is by learning that principle, one becomes more and more qualified to actually embrace the ideals of the Brajapasis. In other words, more and more fit for engaging in Raganuga Bhakti, by which one can come to the Ragatmika platform. You understand? So in that way, by performing Sankirtan, and actually any service, but performing Sankirtan certainly helps one to culture the attitude of being there for the benefit of others, because we're endeavoring to serve the holy name, praying for his divine descent upon our tongues so that we can actually be of some practical service. Otherwise, going through the motions, gradually making ourselves more fit, begging and begging for him to use our tongue as an instrument in the matter of his sound incarnation into the atmosphere for the benefit of others. Not only for my own benefit, but to also give others an opportunity to hear. Because in Chaitanya Bhagavat is mentioned in the statement of Haridas Thakur, when someone was challenging him, why it is that you chant loudly? Is there no religious merit in chanting in the mind? Like that. So then Haridas Thakur, he mentions how it is that even living entities without ears, you know, it's also discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Haridas Thakur mentions there as well. But more detailed discussion on the subject is in Chaitanya Bhagavat, how so many living entities become delivered back home, back to Godhead, by hearing a devotee chanting the holy name, therefore chanting loudly for the benefit of others. And how many microbes are in one little cubic air of air? They all become benefited just by coming in contact with the name Krishna. Here's this little a cubic air full of millions of microbes. They all attain the supreme destination if they somehow or other, by some special mercy of a Vaishnava who's actually chanting Shudanam, they actually hear the pure name of Krishna. They become immediately delivered from material entanglement. And as soon as their little microbe body is finished, they attain the supreme destination. Because the spirit soul in a microbe is the same as the spirit soul in a human body or any other body. It just happens to have a microbe body. But the spirit soul is the same. He becomes completely freed from material coverings. of any kind of gross or subtle body, and attains the supreme destination just by happening to hear a pure devotee chanting your name. And even if he's hearing someone chant Chayanama Vas, still he's becoming free from material contamination, free from all the sinful, reactions, and getting a human birth in a sense. To have this mood of serving for the benefit of others, serving Radha and Krishna, the intention of helping others, that's so much appreciated by Mahaprabhu. It's so much appreciated. So culturing that attitude is also part of our coming to the position of actually deserving a little mercy ourselves.
Yeah.
If we're not interested in helping others, then why should we expect Krishna to be interested in helping us? Otherwise we can go on with our small-minded little concept of what it means to be a devotee.
You're saying that first, you know, you're saying the entrance of the three different stages of like someone who's just a god. You're saying that what was the effect? I think the first one, you said like
you mean the
on the other end is like someone
the sadhaka.
Yeah,
the sadhaka means that he can still pure devotional shraddha in an ordinary man.
Faith to follow the process of devotion.
Yes. Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Sudridha Nischoy Krishna Bhakti Kuali Sarva Karma Kritapari. He can create the determination Sudridha Vishwas in an ordinary man that I will only do pure devotional service. I'll only do that which is favorable for cultivating Shuddha Bhakti, and I'll reject anything which is unfavorable. He can create the sense of accepting that Krishna is our only real protector. He'll create the mood of always being dependent on Krishna's mercy. He'll create within the heart of any ordinary person, he can create the determination to have no separate interest than the interest of Krishna. Therefore, the necessity to know what is the interest of Krishna and abide by it, and meekness and humility. In other words, again, it's still Sharanagati within the heart of an ordinary soul. And on the basis of that Sharanagati, because after all, what are the favorable things? One of the favorable things is sadhu sangha, to associate with devotees. Favorably associating with devotees in six ways. And this is described in Upanishamrita. So then, on the basis of his associating with a pure devotee in those six different ways, even though he's a madhyamadhikari, but he's a pure devotee, Madhyamadhikari, then gradually he can increase his bhajan and come up to the Nishtha platform and also get ruchi for pure devotional practices. Which is pretty good for starters.
No, I'm not saying.
Most people, because the devotees who are preaching to them are not pure devotees yet, they're either Chaya Bhaktas or they're Pratibhimba Bhakta. Chaya Bhakta means shadow of a devotee. Bhakta Praya means like a devotee, but not really a devotee. Looking like a devotee, show bottle, or whatever you might say. Or the Pratibhimba means a reflection of a devotee. That means that they're appearing to be doing devotional activities, but their purpose in the doing devotional activities is to get profit, adoration, and distinction. So they'll worship the deity as long as they get their monthly wage packet. Or whatever. They'll manage a temple as long as they get their monthly wage packet. You know, a house and a car and a color TV. Jai Jagadish Hari. So these are Pratibhimba Bhaktas. So when you associate with such types of materialistic devotees, then generally you don't go beyond the materialistic understanding of...
That's what they can give you.
Yeah. It's only if you come into association with pure devotees that you can actually get pure devotional shraddha. But that pure devotional shraddha, no doubt, can be generated by associating with Srila Prabhupada's purports. As a matter of fact, that's how the pure devotional shraddha, you know, became generated in me. It's just a question of whether you associate. And you're associating with the purports of the predecessor acharyas, won't be dependent on your degree of sincerity, whether you're actually associating, because people, they hear what they want to hear. They see what they want to see.
Just one step, just because we're wondering, we just give out books, because we're not anything, we're just giving the books, and I think the books will do the job.
You're getting the benefit of giving a book. In other words, you're getting the benefit of assisting the preaching of a pure devotee. But you're not getting the benefit of preaching pure devotional service. You're getting the benefit of assisting. Which is also useful.
Yeah. You know, it's pleasing to talk about, doesn't it?
Yeah. But the whole purpose of giving the book is to induce people to join. Lord Chaitanya's Harinam Sankirtan movement. But when they get here, you don't see much Harinam Sankirtan for them to join. That's my objection. So I pound on that point rather.
Pick up that taste.
They've been philosophically convinced by the book to surrender to the performance of the Yuga Dharma.
But they don't find people to do it,
and people are doing other things, and then they say, well, if they're not doing it, I guess that's not the thing to do.
Yes.
And they become kind of like...
contaminated. Well, that's the situation.
They miss the point. Or they lose their focus or their understanding, because after all, they're neophytes. They basically glean the idea, but then everyone's preaching something else, and then, so they kind of like... Said, well, maybe I misunderstood what I was reading. And then whatever they did understand becomes obscured and kind of like put in the subconscious somewhere. And then when someone comes along and says, wait a minute, then they might remember that, actually, I did read something about the fact that it is the Yuga Dharma.
Yeah. It's just in the press, so you get another project.
Yeah. So it's not enough for a book distributor just to be a book distributor. And he also should do non-sankirtan so that he can at least gain some realization what the book is inducing people to do. And that'll give him more inspiration to carry on with distributing books, because by doing non-sankirtan he got prema.
Get taste from that and then he wants to give that to other people.
Yes, it's not like there's everything else to do, but so therefore we really don't have to do the Yuga Dharma anymore for books. That was old fashioned. Now it's outmoded. We can have the computer chant for us. MP3 players and iPods can chant for us. We don't have to chant anymore. It's not like we have to, put our energy into it.
I have one more question.
I have to dress the duties tomorrow.
So you can ask all your stuff quick.
What's the time now?
It's 11:30.
It's 10:40. Oh, 10:38.
Yeah. Okay, we can stop the phone.
You're around for a few days, right?
3 more days, and we'll go back to Marathon.
Go back to where?
Not doing
England.
And then come back.
Hopefully. What are you going to do in England?
Christmas Marathon.
Distributing books?
Yeah.
Okay.
Making a point of staying more in Vrindavan.
I'm trying to...
Yeah, spend more time in Vrindavan.
What, 2 years? Second year now?
This is the second year now. Last year just started. I stay in the summer in England to shoot books, and then because of my life situation, I didn't go back to the mountain last year. This year I'll go back to the mountain and come back.
Yes. Spend more time here, because one thing you have to remember is that whatever sukriti you can get by doing any devotional activity anywhere else in the world, you can get it 1,000 times the same sukriti by doing the devotional activities here.
Yes.
If you're going to chant, or going to do anything, even distributing books, you get 1,000 times the benefit of distributing books by distributing books in Vrindavan or Mayapur. So that's well worth considering.
And then go to Dan, that comes on. I'm bad knees.
Yeah, well, just even seeing Govardhan. It says that by seeing Govardhan, just by having his darshan, you get the benefit of 1 crore of Janmasthami fast. And 1 Janmasthami fast is worth crores of Ekadasi fast. In terms of the amount that comes into your transcendental bank account. So just go to Govardhan, take bath in Radha Kund as many times as possible. Bathe in the Yamuna. Circumambulate Tulsi Devi. Water Tulsi Devi, take care of Tulsi Devi, and you know, when you can do that.
What would happen when I go away, though, is that I'm always moving around after England here?
Whatever, have somebody take care of her. But there's nothing saying that you have to be initiated to sow a Tulsi tree. By sowing a Tulsi tree, you go back home with your life. And there's so many of these things that you can do. By offering the ghee lamp lit by a salty stick, you get the benefit of 10 million ghee lamps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mentioned that there's no one more dear to Krishna than one who offers a ghee lamp lit by a salty stick. You want to become dear to Krishna? There's an easy way to do it. One way is to distribute books. Another way is to... So become doubly dear. Do both.
Yeah, I can do more of those type of things.
So many things like that, you know, can
there's not much
can help you.
Problem money program, the best thing.
Yeah.
And something else.
Yeah. You're not going to go on the altar here in the Krishna Balaram Mandir and offer an arti because you're not initiated. But that doesn't mean you can't take a little giwik, you know, and go in front of Radha and Krishna and offer it to them.
Yeah.
Any time of the year. It doesn't have to be Kartik time.
What is it from a Tulsi stick?
Yeah, just take the dry Tulsi stick and put a little camphor on your giwik. So it lights up fast because your Tulsi stick fizzles out usually too fast. And you quickly transfer the flame from the Tulsi stick onto the giwik and then offer it with a smile.
Okay, I'm just going to try to apply these things more seriously. That's it.
And sooner or later, Krishna will help you. But, you know, it's important to cultivate that mood of begging for forgiveness and begging for mercy. And having the serious willingness to repent whatever happened in a previous life to make it so that there's some impediments to your getting good in this lifetime.
And we just leave the question we don't have if we don't get a chance. It's about the succession getting lost at some point, and then I've seen in Gokul in Raj's book, says there's always two devotees on the planet.
Yeah, but he may not be in the same reciprocal succession.
That was the
whole discussion about what constitutes the sampradaya.
Yeah, that's so important. That's just one thing. When I read that, it gave me a lot of hope as well. I just think there's always someone there.
There's always someone, but you have to find him up. Just like there's different branches.
Yeah.
So if one branch dries up and becomes a sara, then it doesn't mean that there's not a pure devotee. He may be coming in another branch somewhere. Yeah. So then you have to...
But then the other thing comes is loyalty to Prabhupada and so on. That's the whole discussion, actually.
What is it?
Loyalty to Prabhupada and so on.
Loyalty to Prabhupada?
Taking
I wouldn't immediately just throw out the possibility of somebody being a pure devotee in Prabhupada's branch.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If you can find a pure devotee in Prabhupada's branch, then more power to you. May the force be with them.
Purity
is the force.
But that's the whole discussion. It's just understanding all the injustice to Prabhupada as well.
Yeah.
That's the other point I wanted to discuss at some point.